Oh yes, Guilty Movie Pleasure fans, if you thought Halloween was over, buckle up, because we're covering the 2003 remake of Texas Chainsaw Massacre that still to this day scares the shit out of me. Hey!
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Guilty Movie Pleasure.
Well, Popcorn Talk fans, Guilty Movie Pleasure fans, that goes down in history as one of my more mediocre intros. But don't worry, I'm going to make up for it with this show. As we talk, Jesus, that music's so loud. It's like, yeah, get that theme. I'm Ben Begley, and with me as always is not Jesse. He's not here today. I have a very special guest, a friend of mine from college. She's a fantastic director. You've seen her with Into the Dark on Hulu with All That We Destroy and her new film, Satanic Panic, which I have here on Blu-ray that she and some of the cast autographed. My rad friend, Chelsea Stardust. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Yeah. You can find, where can they find you at so they know right off the bat?
Instagram, Chelsea Stardust, and Twitter at Stardust Chelsea. Do not try Facebook. I don't accept any requests from people I've never met.
So. I do that too now. I have friends that have, like, after Funhouse Massacre came out, my buddy Andy, who directed it, he, like, started accepting requests from people that just liked the movie. And I was like, no, that, like, because then that's just too much. It's okay to have a separation. That's what Twitter's for.
Yeah, happy to engage with anyone and everyone on Instagram and Twitter.
So Chelsea and I, for those of you who don't know, which is everyone watching, unless you're friends of ours from Ohio University, Chelsea and I went to the same school, but we didn't go, we weren't, when did you graduate?
2007.
I'm much older. So Chelsea came out to visit when my old roommate, I lived with a mutual friend of ours, and she came out to visit one summer, and both of our mutual friend was off hanging out and working and stuff the entire time. So we hung out. We really got along
with
movies. We bonded over movies, our love for cinema, taking her to 2020 Video back in the day. For those of you, that's a video store that used to exist here. And I used to buy copious amounts of DVDs there that now I can't resell because they're all scratched to hell and they have that sticker on the middle. Joke's on me. But I've been trying to get Chelsea on the show for a while. She's super busy. She's been directing a ton of stuff. All That We Destroy was on Hulu as part of their it's their holiday themed Into the Dark, which is the Blumhouse associated, and it's their holiday themed. And yours was Mother's Day.
Yep.
It came out Mother's Day weekend. Let's give people just. I want to talk. We'll get to Texas Chainsaw, I promise. But I want to take at least 10 minutes here in the beginning, ish. To talk a little bit about All That We Destroy and Satanic Panic, two drastically different.
Yeah.
It's they're both horror, but they're different subgenres. So All That We Destroy, what's so people who haven't seen it, a little pitch for them.
Yeah, it's a science fiction thriller, and in a nutshell, I sort of pitch it as we need to talk about Kevin meets Psycho in a Black Mirror world.
Yeah, that's exactly. Yeah.
It's basically the story of a geneticist who walks in on her son murdering a girl, and in order to protect her reputation and keep her son from going to jail, she decides to clone the girl over and over and over again for her son to kill as a form of therapy. So it's very fucked up.
Super fucked up. And Sean Keller wrote that.
Yes, Sean Keller and James Agnew.
That's right. Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And there we go. We got the poster right there. And our good friend Mark Evans was the DP of both this and Satanic Panic. It's on Hulu now for free, so check it out. There's no reason not to. It's super dark and twisted. And Samantha Mathis?
Yeah, Samantha Mathis, Frank Whaley, Israel Broussard, Aurora Paranow, Dora Madison. Great
Tons
cast.
Of people.
Yeah.
Samantha Mathis was in Super Mario Brothers that we talked about on the show. And despite that movie, she is a fantastic actress. Jesse, my co-host, hated Super Mario Brothers, the movie, so much. I loved it from the nostalgia of seeing it as a child, but... So All That We Destroy is more of a dark... Renee and I watched it. We loved it. It's more of a dark, gritty science fiction thriller with horror elements in it. Like you said, it's a science fiction way of trying to decondition a serial killer. Trying to... Which is so interesting to me because it just also kind of tunes into societally what's wrong right now where... which we need to talk about. Kevin also dives into, which is that, like... How parents have blinders on when their kids are so fucked. When it's like, at a certain point, you have to realize that your child may not be able... And I have a daughter. I have a 3-year-old. Mm-hmm. Like, that has to be such a hard thing to figure out. Like, at what point is your kid too far gone that they can't be saved? Yeah. And that was such an interesting exploration, which the best science fiction explores real-world issues and themes. And we see this all the time. We see creepy ass dudes that had a mom, that have a mom, probably, you know, doing awful things and coming to terms with that and trying to solve that issue. So go watch, go watch All That We Destroy.
Yes, please.
Now I want to focus on Satanic Panic, because I know we have a ton. I know you love Texas Chainsaw, because
yes.
I want to make sure we have time to talk about that. So Satanic Panic, we saw this with a packed house at your West Coast premiere, right, at Beyond Fest?
LA premiere.
Yeah. At Beyond Fest. And if you live in LA and you've never been to Beyond Fest and you're a horror fan, what are you doing with your life? Because it's awesome.
It's amazing.
It's the best crowd to see any kind of genre film with. Their game, they laugh at all the in-jokes. They get exactly what the filmmaker's going for. And Renee and I had a blast with this movie. But I'll let you pitch it first, and then we'll talk about it a little bit.
Yeah, so Satanic Panic's a horror comedy, so very different from Destroy.
Totally different.
It's written by Grady Hendrix, and Grady Hendrix and Ted Gagin did the story. And Grady Hendrix is a novelist. He did My Best Friend's Exorcism and A Horror Store, Paperbacks from Hell.
Yeah.
Ted Gagin's also a director. He did Mohawk and We Are Still Here. So with their names attached to it, I was super excited.
And it was through Fangoria.
And it was Fangoria.
It was their first feature, right?
Second. They did first original.
Yes.
Their first one was Puppet Master, so it was part of a franchise.
Yes.
This was their first original. And it's basically the story of a pizza delivery girl. It's her first day. She is delivering pizzas all over and not getting any tips. So her last delivery of the night is in a very rich neighborhood called Mill Basin.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a huge order and they don't tip her. So always tip your pizza delivery folks. And she takes it upon herself to get that tip. So she breaks in and basically walks in on a satanic cult. They're looking for a virgin.
Good.
She happens to be one. Chaos ensues. And I'll leave the rest for an audience to see.
Let's talk about some of this cast here. You got Jerry O'Connell, Rebecca Romijn, Ruby Modine from Happy Death Day 1 and 2, which I got to meet her at the signing. She's super sweet,
too. Wonderful. Yeah.
She's awesome. There's a scene in there that I don't want to spoil it, but I'll say it involves a Sharpie and Haley Griffith and Ruby Modine. And both Renee and I were like, that scene is our fate. It's so good.
It's
there's so much
of the movie.
There's so much emotion going on. There's real tension. There's horror going on. It's like every feeling wrapped up in one scene, and I loved it. And Jerry O'Connell's hilarious in this movie.
Yeah.
And his Q&A afterwards with Rebecca Romijn about, I think he said, like, the neck thing,
the throat, which I don't want to ruin. You'll know when you see it.
It's so good.
The cast is amazing. We have horror royalty, Jordan Ladd, Jeff Daniel Phillips, A.J. Bowen, Arda Marin.
Which A.J. Bowen was in Your Next, right?
He was.
I loved Your Next.
Yeah, me too. And he was in House of the Devil.
Halfway through that movie, I was like, oh shit, that's a dude from Your Next.
Yep.
I was so stoked.
Yeah, my favorite Thanksgiving movie, not set at Thanksgiving, though I feel like it should be.
it should be. The thing that Renee and I really loved and took away from this is that it starts and it keeps going, but not at the sacrifice of the characters. Like, you feel for Haley Griffith's character right off the bat. Sam is her name.
Yeah.
You feel for Sam right off the bat in a very quick way, and then you get to learn more about her, specifically in the Sharpie scene, that grounds her and grounds you rooting for her. Because that's even something I found, as much as I love the remake of Texas Chainsaw, I don't really know anything about anybody in it except that Jessica Biel, like, I'm rooting for her just because it's Jessica Biel.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I think that that's something that even with Funhouse Massacre, a lot of the reviews on our movie was that, like, they couldn't root for, like, except Renee and Morgan, the two leads or the two romantic characters. But, like, that's a tricky thing. So, like, how much were there any scenes you had to cut that were character building, or was there, like, a fight at any point during that to keep things in?
Yeah, that's a good question. So at the very beginning of the movie, the scenes where Haley's delivering the pizzas, that was originally, I think the film, it's 9 minutes until she's in Mill Basin. Where she is for pretty much the rest of the movie. So that was originally a little bit longer. I think it was originally maybe 13 to 15 minutes. So we lost a couple scenes with Mike Winfield and AJ Bowen and Sam and Haley together, you know, outside the pizza shop, their banter, learning more about Sam. We did have to trim that. And originally, like, we made it into a montage to keep it moving. And we just really, you know, everyone just really wanted to get to Mill Basin.
Yeah.
But I still wanted to keep enough of her character because you have to root for her.
You
have to be on board. And I think the rain helped. You sympathize with her. And so you immediately know, like, whose journey you're going on, like, that it's with Sam. So But yeah, there were a couple things we had to trim. And I mean, I think the movie is like 86 minutes and I think the runtime's perfect. Like, I don't know if I would go back and put that stuff in the movie if I had a chance to. I think it plays really well. It just kind of flies.
So too, because yeah. I also think that it's smart having the profession of a pizza delivery and this girl who's in like a middle class to lower class area, mm-hmm. going into a super rich area and not getting tipped. It's just that immediately just sympathizes her to the audience. Cause I did, Grubhub.
Well,
I did one of those.
Yeah, or Postmates.
I did Postmates for a little bit just cause I was like, well, I'm not, auditions are slow. It's the worst. And like you drive, everybody that I was driving to was like somebody ordering Taco Bell at like 3 in the afternoon and giving me like $1. And I'm like, this, what are you doing having Taco Bell delivered, you assholes? And they were always like people my age coming out in their PJs. And I'm like, okay, I know that I'm doing this because like I'm acting slow right now. But like, what are you doing with your life? Ordering Taco Bell at 3 in the afternoon.
You got the munchies.
I got the munchies.
Taco Bell.
But yeah, so I think that that's just immediately sympathizes her. But I'm telling you, when you watch Satanic Panic, tweet at both Chelsea and
yes,
I. And
let
tell
me know.
Tell us if that Sharpie scene is also your favorite, because there's some stuff in there that I was like, damn, I was not expecting this. And you also balance, and I promise, we're almost done. We're like a minute away from getting into Texas Chainsaw. I just love Satanic Panic so much that I want our fans of the show to watch it. That you balance the humor where I don't feel like it ever gets so campy that it's like unrealistic, because that's such a hard thing with horror comedy, is to not go so far that it becomes a spoof, like the Wayans Brothers Scary Movie. Was there times on set where you had to pull back on something or?
Yeah, there were a couple times. I mean, we're also like a lot of the actors had comedy backgrounds and I wanted everyone to be able to improv. But once in a while I was like, okay, we gotta rein it in.
Remember, it's a horror film.
Yeah.
Did you always envision it as a horror film first with comedy elements or a comedy with horror elements?
I think it was comedy first with horror elements. Mm-hmm. And I just looked at revisited Jennifer's Body and Evil Dead 2.
I've never seen Jennifer's Body.
Oh, my goodness.
And we'll
okay.
do it on the show. Ugh. And you should come back.
I got to go. This has been great. you got to see that.
Evil Dead 2. I mean, the whole Evil Dead series is amazing. I love it.
And Society. And there's a whole, a whole bunch of Deathgasm. There's a bunch of movies that inspired
Deathgasm's
it.
Deathgasm's fantastic. Yeah. If you haven't seen Deathgasm, watch that. Where can they find Satanic Panic right now?
Satanic Panic's pretty much everywhere. It's Blu-ray, DVD. You can still rent it and buy it digitally. It's everywhere. And if you go to Walmart, you can get a variant where the slip cover says panic because they didn't want the word satanic there. But hey, it's going to be worth money. It's going to be a collector's item someday. But if you take the slip cover off, it does say Satanic Panic.
Is it bad that I want to go to the Walmart near my in-laws and just sneakily steal the slip cover and leave and be like, fuck you guys.
They're in like this big plastic case,
oh,
I think. Like
it.
They don't want anyone stealing anything.
I really
satanic.
Want just the panic.
But I might be able to.
Oh, okay. I mean, but it's more fun to steal from Walmart to admit to theft.
Hey, but I'm just excited the movie's in a Walmart. Yeah. A lot of people will see it. And I thought when they told me like, hey, this is going to happen, I was like, that's great. That's fine with me. Yeah. I think it's awesome.
There's also one last thing, because we've been talking, Jesse and I have been talking a lot about this this month when revisiting old 80s horror films like Chopping Mall and Life Force and Demon Knight, is that practical effects are always more obviously tangible, more they add to the tension of things, they add to the believability of a scene. Even if it's more dated like 80s effects, still look better than a lot of CGI from the late 90s to early 2000s. And I love that you used practical effects in this, and I love the there's a practical creature that is incredible in this.
Yeah.
And there's some really fun practical gore and really like gnarly scenes in this for it being comedy. So if that isn't enough for our audience to watch it, then I don't know what the hell you're doing watching this show. Go see Satanic Panic. Let us know what you thought.
Yes, please.
Make sure you follow Chelsea on Twitter and Instagram. But now let's get into the main game here. Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the reboot. Really quickly, just so we can get into it, I want to first get your thoughts on when you saw it versus now. Because I saw it in 2003 when it came out. I was a junior in college. And I remember it being super horrifying. And like, I was very disturbed, but I loved it. And I thought for sure in the 16 years that have passed and all the insane amounts of envelope pushing gore that I've seen in horror films, that this would seem a little tame.
Mm.
It doesn't.
Yeah.
It's still super, we're just going to swear today, whatever. It's super fucked up. And there's some incredibly disturbing moments in this movie. And I think this is blasphemous to some horror fans, but I saw the original Texas Chainsaw years after seeing this.
Oh, no way.
And I watched it with Renee, and both of us, because the acting is a little not great in that original one, we were both kind of like, I think if I'd watched it alone, I would have dug it more, because I'm able to like shift my brain to what time period, but Renee sometimes is like, this just doesn't work anymore. And I'm like, no, I think it does. I think it does. Well, so I want to revisit it. Because I remember a 10-minute scene of like just zooming in on animal and people bones in a kitchen or something in the first one.
Well, the original Texas Chainsaw is like one of my favorite horror movies.
Yeah.
Like Night of the Living Dead, Romero's Night of the Living Dead,
and
the original
Romero's
Texas
Night of the
Chainsaw.
Living Dead.
Like those are my top two. So I love the original. And I saw the original when I was in high school. And was obsessed with it.
Like, when I saw Halloween in high school, I was obsessed with it. I wish I had seen Texas Chainsaw.
Yeah,
I'm going to revisit it for you.
And I think
I trust your opinion 100%.
Well, you definitely need to rewatch it. But I think there's so many things about this movie that, you know, pay a nice homage to that, but also make it its own thing.
Yeah.
And I also saw it on, you know, October 17th, 2003, when it came out. I think I was in college, my freshman year of college, and I saw it in the theater.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing the trailer and being like, this is freaking scary. And there were so many things and I was like, this looks really scary. And I was super opposed to, I was really opposed to horror remakes like that. And then there are a very small handful that I actually love.
I love the Evil Dead one.
I love the Evil Dead one. I actually love the Last House on the Left one. I love the Hills Have Eyes one.
The Hills Have Eyes one's great.
Yeah. And that's about it that I can think of off the top of my head.
But I kind of enjoy, as a horror comedy, the Friday the 13th remake.
Okay, so this one was like the first one that Platinum Dunes did of those remakes.
Yeah.
It was like this one, Amityville.
Nightmare on Elm Street's awful.
And then they did The Beginning, Texas Chainsaw The Beginning. Then they did...
Which was not that great.
The Hitcher, and then Friday the 13th. And Friday the 13th was also Marcus Nispel. And then they did Nightmare on Elm Street, which I don't even talk about that one. But Marcus Nispel, the fact that he did Friday the 13th, like, since I liked this one so much, Friday the 13th is probably the only other one that I, like, give a little bit of leeway to of these remakes. But especially something that I find so precious as Texas Chainsaw, the fact that I went in and ended up, like, really liking it.
Yeah.
And that it just genuinely scared me. And there were so many things, like, how dirty it is, how drippy, goopy, wet.
That basement is so gross.
So gross. And that's something when you watch...
Hep C all over that basement.
All over the place.
It's disgusting. It's disgusting. I just was like, I felt like I needed to wash my hands while watching it.
And there's like a foot of water that's in... And that there's petroleum jelly that they did. Like, all this like...
So gross.
Goopy stuff. But if you... Like, the original is so sweaty.
Yeah.
And you feel how hot it must be. Like, right from the start of this movie, when they're in their, you know, Dodge van...
When they're making out super sweaty, I'm like, you guys are gross. Like, who
I'm into that.
I don't know. Maybe it's just like,
I was digging it.
My wife's always like, you're just not into PDA. I'm like, maybe not. I don't know. But like them making out with their three friends in the car, like they're about to bone and just like sweaty. I'm just like,
And I think that like, you know, right from the, and they obviously tease the beginning with like, you know, they're going to circle back to that when the investigators are there. But just those, like all those little things I really, really liked. And, you know, there's just so many things throughout the opening too. Like, you know, you find out, because there's mention of hitchhikers in it. And I think the movie's set in 1973 because they mention STDs and they mention...
I have that sound clip.
Yeah. And they mention, STDs and hitchhikers. And they're like, I remember because they pick up Pepper because she's a hitchhiker. Because I said, can you believe I just met you like a day ago or whatever it is? And then they also talk about STDs. And I was like, well, and I was trying to figure out, and I just noticed this when I rewatched it because I was really paying attention to everything. And they mentioned the STD thing. And I was like, well... 69 was like Woodstock, Summer of Love. Had that been on the radar by 73? Was it a big deal to be like, you know, was STDs like really something everyone was talking about?
Isn't that right when it started?
I think it was maybe right when it started, but it felt, I almost wasn't sure. I was like, I don't know if I buy that conversation happening in 73, especially like, when you're talking about like swingers and like all that stuff.
Yeah, because it was more like the 80s where like...
And same thing with hitchhikers. I was like, why would it be, like my dad used to hitchhike all the time when he was, you know, in the 60s and 70s. And I was
that's super, now that you say that.
Maybe as a woman, but... You know, obviously, as a woman saying like, "Oh, but when they were talking about, oh, you could get, you know, you could get killed or whatever."
Yeah, no, I feel like everybody hitchhiked in the 70s.
Yeah, and people were hitchhiking to Woodstock and all that stuff in the 60s, in 69. So I'm like, I don't know. That was the one thing where I was like, that feels like a modern thing.
Yeah.
And Yeah. So anyways, but those are some things in the opening, just as they were teasing those things out. And also like Jessica Biel setting up, you know, she's like, doesn't drink, doesn't smoke. And then you find out she was in juvie. So I'm like, oh, now I get it.
which is so funny though, when she's like, when they justify how she knows how to hotwire a car just by being like, I was in juvie. And it's like, oh, all right,
yeah,
I guess.
Okay.
I guess that's a thing.
And then with the lock, she's like, I have brothers. Like, she's like, oh, brothers. I was like, okay, but, cool.
And I guess I'm okay with that stuff in horror films because I'd rather just like get into it. But yeah,
I wish she just knew how to do that. Like,
yeah, or yeah, why can't she just know?
Yeah.
You know, like, I feel like Your Next does a good job of that, where like she was just raised by survivalist parents.
Yeah, I was a tomboy. Like, yeah, you know. But the other thing I love is two things that carry over from the original is Daniel Pearl, the DP, because he shot the original Texas Chainsaw was the first thing he shot.
Really?
And then he shot this.
I didn't know that.
He did a ton of music videos, but he also DP'd this.
That's
and
awesome.
He DP'd Friday the 13th. So they worked together again. And then, of course, John Larroquette doing the voice, both in the original Texas Chainsaw and this one, the intro at the beginning, the voiceover.
You know way more about this than me. I just show up and say goofy things. I'm learning stuff. I saw John Larroquette when I looked at your...
I got my notes.
You got your notes. It's more than Jesse ever does. Jesse, if you're watching, step up your game, bro. Let's try and do just for fun, the plot in under 3 minutes. In fact, let's do the plot. Yeah, in under 3 minutes.
I mean, I have all the scenes written out, so I don't know if.
You know what? Why don't we skip that? Because we only have 20 minutes. We'll just get into it, Ryan. Because the plot in under 3 minutes, we're gonna go over it, and I'd rather spend time going over it.
Yeah.
So let's first play clip number one, which is the intro.
Yeah.
John Larroquette didn't know that. Night Court. Little Night Court action. Let's play clip number one.
Here we go.
The events of that day were to lead to one of the most bizarre crimes in the annals of American history. The Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
So good. And the scream at the end.
There's something... Before I even saw the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, this one or the original or any of the various spinoffs, because of just knowing of Leatherface and how iconic he is, anytime I heard a chainsaw still to this day, we went to Halloween Horror Nights last night, and there was a couple times a chainsaw came up, and I'm like, nope, don't love that. No, it's like, it's horrifying. And I remember there was a haunted hayride back in Ohio where they would sit on there in cloaks with you, and then they'd whip out a chainsaw, and like, at the time, I remember them putting it on my leg because it didn't have a chain,
on it.
I was just like, nowadays, I don't think you could do half the stuff.
Yeah, I remember,
they would,
like,
swing from the trees and jump onto our hayride.
Yeah,
and it was just like
crazy stuff.
It was horrifying. And so I think, like, from such an early age, and that may be why for so long I was so, like, adverse to Leatherface.
And that was for me, like, we used to have Halloween parties. I had them growing up, and my dad would take the chain off the chainsaw because we were in the middle of nowhere, like, Midwest.
Yeah.
And we'd go on hayrides through our neighbor's Christmas tree farm and chase after us with chainsaws. So I hadn't even seen Texas Chainsaw Massacre because I was so young at that point and had no idea that was what, but I was like, this is so scary. And then when I saw the movie, I was like, oh, this is the worst.
Horrifying.
Horrible. And even in haunted houses now, I hear it and I pull a George Costanza. I push everyone out of my way and just run out of there. Like, I just take off, push everybody aside, whoop, I'm out. And I'm like, I would have survived. Like, I would have lived.
Yeah. Renee last night in the Wolfman versus Frankenstein maze, there were these two sections where there were curtains on either side, and Wolfman came out of one and Frankenstein came out of the other. And the first time it scared the hell out of all four of us that were going through. And then there's one again at the end of the maze. Renee shoves me and pushes me out of the maze.
Mm-hmm.
And then my friend Andrea behind us just goes, ah! And she runs by, and then nothing comes out. So it's even better that we all were like, no! Maybe they're on break. I don't know.
That's awesome.
But so there's five friends. Basically, the beginning of it, there's these five friends that are on their way to. We get that John Larroquette intro. There's
Aaron, Morgan, Pepper, Andy, and Kemper.
Yeah, Pepper and Andy have just met. They're making out. Ugh, to me, not my style, but I respect it. If that's
I was
your
into
thing.
It.
That's your thing. Me, I'm just like, hey, your friends are here. You're making them uncomfortable. you get that Aaron and Kemper are dating, but he seems kind of like an idiot. Like, I don't see what she sees in him. Eric Balfour, I like him as an actor. His character in this seems super just like aloof, and like they went to Mexico to get 100 how many pounds of pot, some ridiculous
a lot
of pot, which in the 70s was very illegal.
Yes.
Like now
yes.
I'd be like, hey, whatever. Anyways, they pick up this hitchhiker. What's the hitchhiker's name? Poppy, isn't it, or something like that?
The one that's hanging out with them?
No, the one that...
Oh, I don't think we hear her name.
Okay.
Yeah.
But before that, they're making out, and Morgan tells them this clip number two.
Hello. Can we have a pause or halftime? Okay. The fact that 33,000 Americans each day are infected with a sexually transmitted disease, and two-thirds of them are just about your age.
That's me.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, but also I'm like, I don't even know if those, like, facts were out by then in 73. But
that's me in every, I'm the buzzkill when it's like, hey, guys, like, or like back when I worked at Tokyo Delves and everybody was like getting phone numbers and hooking up with girls, I was like, guys, you realize that that's like dangerous and stuff. And I'm like, I'm going to like go through them and call a few and see who I vibe with on the phone and then take them out to dinner. And then inevitably would be me going out to dinner and then being like, what the hell am I doing here? And then like never calling me again.
Well, we hear Sweet Home Alabama in that clip, which they're on their way to a Leonard Skinner concert in Dallas. So that's where they're en route to.
Yep.
And I actually love their costumes too. Like, it's very true period like attire, and lots of navels everywhere.
Navels everywhere.
Like, I was into it. I was like,
Jessica
all right,
Biel's
cool.
Navel the entire movie.
Yep,
and
yep.
I remember I had, and still I had a crush on Jessica Biel back in the day. I think I watched Seventh Heaven every once in a while.
Seventh Heaven, that's right.
I never watched it like fully, but I watched it every once in a while just because I had a crush on her. But yeah, she's great in this movie. I feel like her acting
is
super good. Like,
she is committed. She is here for it. Like, I was just when I was revisiting the movie before coming here.
It's raw. Her performance is raw in this movie.
She's so scared that I'm scared.
Yeah.
For her, like, her performance was so great and so spot on and super underrated, I think.
And it's not like sometimes you can get in horror films where it feels a little forced or like there's a vanity behind it, like worrying about looking too ugly. Like, she's not afraid to like get all like full on snotty with stuff. She gets in the dirt and she gets her hands dirty, her face dirty, everything. And it's a very... The performance really lives up.
Yeah.
Still. And I think you're right. I think she's one of the more underrated final girls.
And I think everybody is awesome in the movie. Like, the whole cast, I think all of them are bringing their A game. They're all like dirty, snotty, a lot of spit, like Morgan.
Who's more
Jonathan Tucker.
Jonathan Tucker, when his mouth is quivering with the sheriff.
When he has to recreate the scene.
Oh, that scene's so intense.
And then he like turns the gun and there's so much spit. Oh,
Arlie Ermey is his name, right?
Oh, he's so vicious. He's almost scarier to me than Leatherface.
He's way scarier.
And also, Leatherface has the family has a name, because in the original one, no one had a name. Yeah. And then in the second one, they're the Sawyer family of the original.
They're the Hewitts.
The Hewitts in this one. And Thomas is Leatherface's, is his actual name in the movie. So they give him a name. But Arlie Ermey is
so scary,
horrible, and just vicious and savage in this movie, where it's like, I think he's scarier than Leatherface.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so they pick up the hitchhiker. She looks like, I guess to them, they just think maybe she's on drugs or something in the beginning. And then she drops this bomb on him. Clip number three. Clip number three, Ryan.
Sorry.
Well, it's all ruined. We're going to stop.
What's your name? They're all dead.
Oh my god,
I'm way too stoned for this.
Jonathan Tucker's reaction's so good. It reminds me of like some of the reactions in Midsommar, where it's funny, but it's a very genuine reaction to a horrific
something
situation.
Horrible. Yeah, and then like that, the scene of her pulling out the gun, sticking it in her mouth, shooting herself, and then the camera moving back and going through her head, through the back.
It's
like, that
so
shot's
intense.
Incredible.
Where everybody's just losing their mind. It's such
a
great shot.
And the reactions, the screaming, they get out and puke. Like, all stuff that, like, I absolutely believe. Like, that's how you would react to it.
Yeah.
And then they actually, like, do the right thing. They're like, we should find a sheriff. We need to talk to a police officer. Like, they're doing, like, we're not going to cover the body. We're not going to dump it somewhere. They're actually trying to do the right thing. Yeah. And then, of course, it horribly backfires.
And at every turn, for the most part, they make good decisions, unlike most horror films, where it's like, oh, we're going to call the sheriff. We're going to wait for him. Okay, we're going to...
Yeah.
And they don't know just... They're not being judgy for these strange people they're meeting, or, like, this strange kind of, like, weird tooth kid. You know, they're just, like... Maybe
Jedediah.
Jedediah. He's the only good guy of the entire Hewitt family.
He saves her. He's the reason she lives. Like, yeah.
It's so crazy. So, we got to speed along. We have so much to cover.
The gas station. I even wrote down, because before I knew the quotes that we were going to play, what you do is your own business.
Yeah.
Like that. And that sums up so much.
Yep.
It sums up so much about where they are and these people. And they're like, well, that's your business. What you want to do, that's up to you.
Yeah.
I was like, whoa.
It's a perfect lead into clip number 4.
Why the hell won't the sheriff just come out here?
Didn't say. He said it'd be about 2 hours before he could get here.
We're not going to drive around this town with a dead girl in the back of our van. Yeah.
Young man, what you do is your own business.
The delivery of that line is so good. Like, just how she and her whole, like, that young man, and she, like, looks at him and takes a beat. Oh, whew, and you're just like, oh, there's a lot of messed up stuff that happens here.
Because the performances in this, I feel like this is very underrated. It got crapped on by critics when I looked on Rotten Tomatoes. It got totally shit on. And you can buy that these people, these kids, just think that they're in a little bit of a backwoods area of the South, where they're looking at them as hippie kids going to a Lynyrd Skynyrd concert, and that's why they're being so kind of shitty and judgy and weird to them. Like,
yeah.
And I feel like it escalates in such a kind of methodical way that by the time Arlie Ermey's character is like making him put the gun in his mouth, you're like, oh God, we're already in a place where we can't get out of this now. And it justifies why they all split up. You know, it's like, well, some of us have to try and stay here and clean the car and wait for the sheriff here.
So they go to the old mill, mm-hmm. and then they're like, they ask Jedediah, which is, that's where they meet him. And he says, they said, this is a little plot hole, but they say, where's the sheriff? He's like home drunk. And he's like, well, where does he live? And he says, the road don't go there, but the road does go there because you see a driveway, you see a road,
absolutely.
And they drive there later. So I thought that was a little strange. But they walk through the woods, I guess it's a shortcut, to that big, huge house.
Every shot of
That's in Granger, Texas, is where it actually is. And you're not allowed to like go near it. You can't, like, the owners will freak out, apparently, if you go to visit that location. They're like not cool with people visiting that location. So, but that house is incredible. Like, what a find.
They always backlight it with like huge lights. So just, you can see the emptiness of it. It's incredible.
So cool. Yeah.
I want to get into some of the more meat of it. Because like 45 minutes into this movie, it kicks in and then it never lets up.
Yep.
It's like, and it does. But it's not a slow first 45 minutes. It's ratcheting up
and
this tension.
And,
it's super engaging. Like, normally when I watch slasher films, I feel like the first 20 minutes or so, I'm just like, all right. Like, a lot of the Friday the 13th movies, I'm just like, okay, I get it. This guy's a stoner.
Here's all the characters. Here's what they're like.
It takes 40 minutes until we get the first kill. But this one, you're just like, everything's icky. It's weird. When they get in there. Okay, so first, Arlie Ermey's character. He has some great one-liners. We'll play clip number 5.
That's just an educated guess, but my money says your dead body's right there in that van.
So creepy.
And he's so gross. And also, there's so many red flags as to this guy is not the sheriff. And obviously, simultaneously, you're seeing, if I remember correctly, you're seeing Aaron and Kemper, she goes to the old man's house and calls the sheriff.
But somebody always dials for them, right?
And someone dials for them, but they're like, he'll be there in 30 minutes. And then you find out that he was already there. So it's like, well, clearly that's not really the sheriff, but no one picks up on that.
Do you think that both times they're calling, it's never to the police, it's to somebody in the Hewitt family? That's what I thought.
I
thought maybe the house, but then he dials for her. Or no, he says there's no home.
No.
He says there's no phone in the house.
No, there's a phone. She dials it in the house.
That's right. Okay.
And he's like, but you can hear someone on the other line.
I'm sorry. I'm thinking of the trailer park later
that scene. Okay. Oh, boy. Okay. We'll get there.
8 minutes. Oh, my God. Okay. So
the old man's super gross.
The old man's super gross.
Sheriff arrives. They take the body.
The sheriff arrives, takes the body. This is another great sound clip. Clip number 6 with when they're trying to put the dead body in the back
wrapping
of the cop's
car. Wrapping it with
car.
Saran wrap.
That seems so wrong.
Don't give me any crap, young lady. God damn it, I got just as much respect for a dead body as anybody around here. Hey! Get that nasty goddamn thing out of the back seat of my goddamn car. Put it in the trunk. What the hell's that with you?
And the immediate reversal. I got respect. Hey, get that nasty goddamn thing.
Nasty goddamn thing.
Yeah, just takes it and just wraps, and it's like, that's maybe a red flag, y'all.
Yeah.
So
then we're in with the guy, the amputee, the guy in the wheelchair with no legs.
Simultaneously. Yeah.
And things are ratcheting up there. He's groping her while like trying to get picked up off the toilet. And then this scene scared the hell out of me then and still does, where this is your first intro to Leatherface with the main cast. Yeah. Clip number 7.
Little turd.
He's banging his kid.
You're so dead you don't even know it. Come on, boy. Bring it. Bring what? Bring it.
It instantly gives me chills.
Oh, so good.
And there's an incredible chase sequence that happens where they get separated in the house. And they're smart. They go for weapons immediately.
Yeah.
They're like trying to find weapons, trying to defend themselves.
And at this point, Kemper's already been killed. Like Kemper, yes. Like his head's already been bashed in with a hammer.
Yeah.
Because that's when they first go. And then Aaron and Andy go back to the house. And they just he sneaks in. She's like, Andy, like here's something fall. Runs in. That's when he's like, what are you doing in my house?
Yeah.
And
Kemper's
then that's when Leatherface comes
out. Nowhere.
And he's running through. Yes, he just gets hit on the head. And then you see him, like, taking his face off, which comes back later. And then Andy ends up, he's running. And that's a beautiful
cool
the cinematography scene. Is so gorgeous in this. But he's running through the sheets. And then he gets his leg
and the blood just splatters
off,
all
everywhere.
Over
and he's screaming. And then Leatherface packs the wound. He, like,
with salt. Oh,
yeah,
so
he's like,
well,
so
first
gross.
He hooks him.
Yeah, puts him up.
On a
salt.
Meat hook. Oh.
Brown, like, a packaging paper, like, definitely, like dressing a wound or saving that piece of meat for later.
I think since we have 6 minutes left, we should just talk about all the super gory moments instead of going plot by plot.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah,
let's do that.
You also see Leatherface's face. You see his face. He takes the mask
off. Which is crazy.
And he's like, he has a skin disease, so they say what's wrong with him. Like, he's missing a nose.
And the scene that still horrifies me is when Andy's trying to free himself off the hook.
And on the piano, and he's like, and then the chain gives, and he falls, and then his toes are touching it, and that's how, Pepper ends up dying.
Pepper dies because...
outside the van.
That's
they're trying to escape.
So Aaron goes back freaking out, finds Pepper, and this is after, what happened to Morgan? I forget,
Pepper dies, and she ends up running.
But Pepper dies in a great way where her vest, the feathers just...
The down jacket just feathers fly everywhere,
and you know
and
she's gone.
In that moment, I get really excited about this. In that moment, she sees, Leatherface, his back is to Aaron, and he turns, and in the light, he's wearing Kemper's face. And when she realizes,
so
she's like, holy shit.
It looks super real, too.
It looks amazing.
And that whole scene where it I don't know why I thought of, not Jurassic Park, but like I thought of like with the car when they're just sitting there thinking they're going to get out and then the chainsaw rips through the side of the car.
Yeah, she gets it started and then the wheel falls. But
it's so incredible.
Leatherface ends up getting her, or she runs to the trailer. She gets to the trailer. She gets drugged.
How did he get Morgan though? At what point? I can't remember now.
I think Morgan was the sheriff. The sheriff took Morgan. He like arrests him and takes him in.
She
gets drugged at the trailer by those two women who have that baby that they've kidnapped from the girl walking in the road.
She's really adamant
about
giving her tea. She's like, here, take this tea.
Drink this tea.
She's like, I don't want any fucking tea.
And
I
hear the phone ring
because
they're like, there's no phone here.
And this is one of my favorite clips from the trailer even. This is the creepy lady who's in the trailer with the baby that isn't... They have a baby there that is clearly not hers.
That's the brother to the girl, the hitchhiker. Yeah.
Clip number 8.
Oh my.
Everything's gonna be fine real soon. I promise.
Oh, I forgot. Whoa. Morgan gets cracked in the face by a bottle.
And it's so brutal. Yeah. Like his teeth fall out. He can't talk. It's really Arlie Ermey.
He's
brutal.
So vulnerable. It's such a rough sequence. And then,
We get back. So we end up back at the house.
In the living room.
They take him to the living room. Then they throw Aaron in the basement. That's where she finds
Andy.
And
that sequence. Like we said, with the toes on the... There's toes on the piano, and there's blood dripping everywhere, and he asks her to finish her off.
Yes.
And she stabs him, and then there's that great moment that all final girls get, where she's covered in blood.
Covered in blood, yeah.
And then Jebediah comes back and shows her the way out.
And Morgan. She finds Morgan in the tub. Morgan. And also she says, like, please forgive me. Like, when she has to kill Andy, that moment to me, I was like, it really affected me when I recently watched it. But gets Morgan. They go through the house.
And he can't talk anymore because his jaw's so fucked.
Yep. And they run through the house that feels very Texas Chainsaw 2 when they're running. And then Jebediah shows her the way out. And they end up going to another house and they hide out.
Poor Morgan
ends up getting killed.
He gets, Leatherface lifts him and hangs him by his handcuffs. He's still handcuffed. And then I like that they tastefully didn't show a bunch of blood, that it's just graphic enough that you see the chainsaw going up to his crotch.
Yeah, and just,
and then just, and you then know they, he's been killed.
And then she runs out.
And it's the next, like, 20 minutes is some of the most intense things I've ever seen.
She decides to go to the meatpacking plant because that seems like, or the, yeah. The,
I think
the,
she's just going
the,
in any
that's
building.
A good idea. And I was like, no, just keep running. Stop going into these buildings. But she ends up going in there, which is still, like, in the first movie, there's, it's doesn't exist anymore. It's gone out of business. But in this movie, it's the meat company is flourishing, it seems like. And she's hiding there. She's cold.
She hides
in the freezer
in a carcass, and he starts shoving them all together.
So crazy.
And then she hides in the locker and puts a pig in the other one and then jumps out. And I'm no doctor or anatomologist, which isn't a word, but I know a little bit about anatomy, that I know she may have been strong and had that survival instinct to hack away at his arm, but she hacks it clean off through
straight
bone
off.
Muscle.
Yep.
This is a big dude.
Yep.
Just, but I love it. I don't care that it makes no sense, really, anatomically. The best part about that is when the chainsaw's whipping around with his severed arm.
Yes.
And he's banging it against the wall to get his, like, grip off of it.
Yeah.
And then he chases her one-handed. Then she flags down a semi, gets in there, freaks out with him because he's taking her back down. Oh, my God, 1 minute. Okay. Arlie Ermey shows up. She fucking runs over him.
With his cop car.
With his cop car.
Yep.
Backs up over it, then runs over him again.
And
which
then
is
she
awesome.
Gets away with the boy, the baby. Yes. She gets to the baby.
We're trimming details here. It's
and,
okay. You should watch it.
And she survives, and then at the end, it's revealed that...
Oh, and Leatherface, one last, just like a throwback to the original.
Quick little, it's not as elaborate as the dance in the original, that's so beautiful, but he has a quick moment.
That's my biggest qualm about the movie, is that they just, like, loom on him going, like...
Rrr. Well, they knew there was going to be a sequel, probably.
I guess.
Or a prequel, and sequel, whatever.
I feel like the original, just that was a moment that was so iconic.
That was a beautiful... Yes.
Him just, like, freaking out, like...
Incredible.
Whoa! It's
yeah,
so
the
good.
Dance that he does.
Yeah.
And then it's revealed in the police footage that Leatherface was still... The house hadn't been secured, and he ends up attacking, killing those two.
What kind of shitty police officer showed up and didn't secure a house with, like, 7 dead bodies and, like... multiple corroded bodies.
And the case remains open is what they end it with. But I think this movie, I think it's, honestly, it's gotten a really bad rap.
I don't know why. It's
awesome. Yeah, I think it's really intense. It's super brutal. Not for everyone if they have, you know, if you have a problem with gore, definitely don't see this movie.
No.
But I actually think it sort of stands on its own. I think of the movies very separately. Like, I don't, you know, I approach them as two totally different movies. And I think there is space in the cinema world for both of them.
I think so, too.
But I just find it to be, it's not glossy. It's not pretty. There's nothing pop about it. It's grimy. It's dirty. It's gross. Just like the original.
Yeah.
But still is its own thing. So
I agree 1,000% with that. And we've run out of time. We could have talked about this for an hour and a half.
So many notes.
Let us know what you thought about the Texas Chainsaw Massacre reboot. Remake, I should say.
Remake.
Did you like any of the other sequels? Because I didn't after this one. Let us know what movies you want to see in November. Any Thanksgiving-themed ones? Or not. Doesn't have to be.
Yeah, Halloween 365.
Yeah, we always love your suggestions. Until next time, where can they find you, Chelsea?
Instagram and Twitter, Chelsea Stardust and Stardust Chelsea.
All right, go see Satanic Panic and All That We Destroy, All That We Destroy on Hulu. Satanic Panic everywhere. Until next time, you can find me at The Ben Begley and at Guilty Movie Guys. And thanks for watching. What is your guilty movie pleasure?
Thank you.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.